Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine and I'm now joined by Alex Stewart.
Hi, Joe.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Well done. Have a nice day?
Yeah.
Good football, wasn't it?
The football was great.
Yeah, okay. We're also joined by JJ Bull, the Bull Man. Hello, JJ.
Hello.
How are you?
Yeah, wonderful.
You're sitting where not Seb would normally sit, aren't you?
I am sitting where not Seb would normally sit.
What happened to Seb today?
Well, oddly, was at the zoo on a day off.
Yes, he was.
And very unlike him to peer into the lion's enclosure. But, you know, if you lean in too far, gravity and balance take over.
Yeah. And he's not got the best center of gravity anyway, has he?
He seems well balanced to me.
Sure.
But when there's lions involved, it's very easy to go over the edge.
Yeah, that's right. So if you're looking for Seb, you'll no longer find him at the Overhead Lion. You'll find him in the lion enclosure of London Zoo, which I believe is actually encased in glass. But for the purposes of this, it's not. So there you go. That's where Seb is. But we're delighted to have JJ today. And we're going to talk through Belgium, Italy, big fun to be had there. And also Switzerland, Spain, even more fun to be had there. Later, we'll look forward to the semi-final, which will be between Italy and Spain. I'm very excited about that game. But let me tell you what else I'm excited about, Alex. I'm excited about The Athletic, aren't you?
Yeah, constantly.
What have you read recently which has excited you on The Athletic?
Well, Michael Cox did a tactical preview of the quarterfinals, which was a nice overview of.
Did he get it right?
Yeah.
Of course he did. He's always getting it right, isn't he, old Michael Cox? I like Michael Cox's stuff.
There's some nice stats in there as well, and it's not the obvious stuff. There's a few things that are worth kind of looking out for rather than things that you'd automatically see. And obviously, there's two quarterfinals to go, so yeah. It's worth reading still.
Well, there you go. Check out Michael Cox on The Athletic. And do you know, JJ, that there's currently an offer that you could take if you wanted to? It's £1 per month for 6 months, which is a great offer. It's less, I would say, than you would spend on a new car.
It is less than a new car.
It is less than that.
Yeah.
And loads of other things. In fact, it's less than most things.
What will you use more? Hmm? A car to drive to the football? Or a subscription to The Athletic?
I'd say you'd use that almost every day.
You use it in the morning. You drive your car in the morning? I don't think so.
I don't think so. Don't do both at the same time. But do visit theathletic.com/TIFO to get that subscription deal for £1 per month for 6 months to The Athletic.
And a new car.
And a new car. But for now, I'm very excited to talk about the games. They're confusing football at times. It was strange. I didn't really understand what was happening. And we're going to dig deep into the happenings of today's first two quarterfinal games with JJ Bull and Alex Stewart. I leave you on the warm hands and the cool embrace of Italy, I think we should say today. Yeah. lots to begin then, but with Belgium 1 to Italy. JJ, Italy were the better team. I know that seems straightforward. But even though this game, you know, it was tighter than the previous games, they still created so many chances against quite a slow Belgian defence. It was great fun.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. The first half was one of the most fun games to watch for the entire tournament. Some of my friends were texting me saying that it was really boring, the second half. They thought it was really boring. I thought it was entertaining. They said Italy was very defensive. I thought they were excellent, and they were defended by attacking really high up the pitch.
Yeah.
And we covered this in a Tifo IRL preview video we did about Italy. And just to say, I got almost everything right, but it's all in there. And that's exactly how they do it. They defend by attacking, keeping the opposition pushed right back. And Belgium early on were trying to test that by getting balls over the top to Lukaku. A couple of times it seemed to have worked, but didn't really result in any goals for them as far as I'm aware. They scored a different way. And then Italy just had control of the game and just kept Belgium far away from them. They couldn't get to them at all. That's the thing. And like the Belgium defence, I mean, it's Vertonghen, Alderweireld and Vermaelen. I don't even know where Vermaelen was for the last 4 years or something.
Yeah. Japan. I think. Apparently he plays in the same team as Iniesta.
Oh, yeah, them.
Vissel Kobe.
Yeah.
Vissel Kobe. There we go.
That's the one. I don't know, when you look at the Belgium team, like they have some great players. Lukaku, obviously, De Bruyne are the absolute standouts. Tielemans, I think you could put him there as well. But there are lots of weaknesses and lots of averageness, lots of medium in there. And the back line, like, you're only really as strong, I always think, is your goalkeeper. The goalkeeper's Courtois is very good, but the players in front of him aren't, like, you can see that they want to play a high line so they can control possession, but you can't do it against certain teams. That's definitely why I think Chiesa started for Italy. Yeah. I mean, he was good when he came on as a sub the other day. But you can just test him with balls at top, and Chiesa was really good this evening. And you saw how much damage Spinazzola and Insigne were doing. And then there was a part where Insigne's goal is because the centre-backs are backing off, they're not putting pressure when they should step on. Maybe because they're worried about pace. I think you were saying something about that, Alex, but the team with Man City and Fernandinho. So they're just stepping off of them and giving them room to take that shot because they're old.
Yeah, I mean, they are super old. Speaking of a player that isn't old, though, I wanted to ask you, Alex, about Marco Verratti, because he started today again over Locatelli, which almost seems unfair in some ways because Locatelli had such a bright start to the tournament. We can understand why, though. And also, Seb has left us this, from the Lion's Den, has left us this lovely little stat in here saying that in terms of shot-creating actions per 90, Verratti is by far the highest in the tournament. Also, 4.5 key passes per 90, which is, again, the highest of anyone. I think De Bruyne was second with 3.3, so you can really see the impact there. And obviously, while he wasn't playing in the first couple of games, he's become sort of the driving force for an Italian team which just seemed to create so much in games.
Yeah, so what we know about Verratti already is that he's really good at passing and that range of passing is short, medium and long, so he can keep the ball ticking over, and particularly with Jorginho, who I thought excelled this evening, they can maintain possession. He can also look to spring players moving into the wide areas with those little lobbed passes over the top, or he can play clever through balls.
But he does it all.
He does it all. But the other thing that he does, and we were trying to remember at what point he had done this in a recent game, but there was an instance just before one of the Italian goals where he nips in and steals possession from his pressing and then plays a short, kind of very smart pass out to the right-hand side. He did it against another team, but it was out to his left. So that kind of aggressive snapping towards the ball, winning it back, whether it's an interception or a tackle, but then having the wherewithal to immediately play a short pass to release a player into space, that means that Italy can play this incredibly high and aggressive line because they've got a ball winner who's operating 10 yards outside the opposition box. Like, that's quite remarkable. And yes, I think Locatelli did really well. I'm a big fan of how Locatelli plays, but he tends to sit off a little bit deeper. Verratti's got this aggression, which allows him and also Barella to push up and really dominate those half spaces on either side, with Jorginho kind of anchoring and playing balls over the top. And that added additional aggression has really, really suited Italy.
Here's a question, because we've seen in this tournament lots of teams play three at the back. And the last time we were here, we were chatting about England and Germany. England, I suppose, famously now matched up Germany's three. And we've heard from you before and from JJ before that that seems to be a really good thing to do when you're facing good teams who play three at the back for a whole assortment of reasons. Italy didn't do that today. And I just wanted to understand what the kind of benefits of the opposite are, because they still very clearly had lots of control over the game. Yeah. They had more possession. Belgium's wingbacks didn't seem to trouble them in the way that Germany's did versus Portugal, for example. What are the benefits of staying as a four?
So the benefits of staying as a four are predicated on the quality of player that you have. So there are a couple of things here that Italy were able to do by staying in a four. One of them is that their natural phase of play is to push Spinazzola very, very high on the left and tuck Di Lorenzo back almost as like a right-sided centre-back. In fact, in one other game they played Toloi as a right-back when he is effectively a centre-back for Atalanta. So they do have this asymmetrical thing which does effectively leave them with three at the back because the right-sided player maintains the width higher up, Chiesa or Berardi, and then the left wing back does that, or the fullback does that. So they've kind of got a three shape anyway.
It's kind of the best of both worlds.
It is the best of both worlds. And I think this is one of the things, and also someone like Jorginho can drop back and form that three if both fullbacks are pushing up high, which they also do. So you get the same benefits in build-up shape, but you can also maintain dominance in the midfield because you have a three-on-two in the midfield unless the wing-backs tuck inside. The other thing is, and again to go back to it, that this Belgian defence is slow. And so while they're looking to play a high line and the wing-backs are looking to push up, that means that in this game, Insigne and Chiesa could occupy quite wide positions sort of tucked in behind those wing-backs, which would then allow them to run in behind and then the Italian full-backs would push up. Mm. Now, if the Italians had gone to a 3-4-3, they could still have done that, but then they would have been 3-on-3 all the time at the back without that additional man in midfield.
So it
made perfect sense in this instance because Italy could continue to play the way they wanted to play, but they could also target a particular weakness of Belgium's.
You know, when I look at you, all I can see is Gattuso. It's all I can see now. It was a very
sometimes
eloquent
may be good.
Explanation. Sometimes maybe not. Yeah. For listeners, Alex has shaved much of his top hair off, but he's got the bottom hair on the face there, the beard hair. And as you were going through that lovely explanation, thank you for that.
You just glazed over.
All I could see was Gattuso is explaining tactics to me. It was lovely. It was a lovely moment. I want you to do the same now, JJ, but I want you to do it about Barella, who scored a lovely goal and he sort of squeezed through those three defenders, popped it round up into the top corner. He was a player that you were very excited to see before the tournament began. He was your pick in a way.
He was.
I mean, he was Roberto Mancini's pick, but he was kind of your pick.
And James Horncastle told me about him as well.
Sure. Still, you know.
Yeah, but it was mostly me.
Yeah, I'd say so.
He had a great season playing for Inter Milan with Antonio Conte. Excuse me. So he played for Inter Milan last season under Conte, where you have to do a lot of running if you're in the midfield three, or midfield two, I should say. Mm. And he starts to run a lot under Conte. It's what he demands of you. He does that every single week and still has energy left over. It's just a naturally very energetic, full of stamina, the boy.
Yeah.
That's what he's got. And so he can run box to box, and you can see, like, I think a lot of people realize he would be, he's 24, so he's going to come into his peak years as a midfielder now.
Yeah.
Great age for this tournament. Does that make sense? What am I saying?
I'd say so. That's a good age for a tournament.
Yeah.
25 for the next one.
It's always a good age if you're ready.
Is that better, 25? The World Cup, it'll be 25.
There's a thing where you're like young until you hit like 23, 24, and you're like, oh, I haven't filled your potential yet.
Yeah.
And it happens overnight.
Yeah. That is 24. I think that's a good point. If you're a great, exciting prospect, you get away with it until you're 25. And then when you're 25, if you haven't fulfilled that potential, that's it, it's over.
And as you still think they're young. But anyway, Barella is definitely... So he set up the Insigne's goal as well. He gets an assist for that, even though it's all Insigne with the stuff he does. But yeah, it's, you won't get him away from Inter Milan, I wouldn't have thought, because he's so important to them there. But he is outstanding. He's full of energy, really determined. You see he's got a great touch. And will happily run in behind. And like Alex was saying with the way that Italy play, the right-sided winger will pull out wider to leave that kind of half space between him and the striker free. And that's where Barella goes. That's why he plays in the right midfield. So he gets into that positions. And there's goals that he scored in the build-up to the tournament where he was running through and go, the one against Czech Republic's really good, but he drives into that space that's left, hits one that's deflected and goes in. Yeah, one of those midfielders that's kind of good at everything. There seems to be a lot of midfielders that are specific one role, don't do one thing, whereas Barella seems to be able to do all of the things that a midfielder should be able to do.
Yeah. I guess also for an opposition, it's just not having another player to worry about beyond the front three.
Yeah, both ends of the pitch,
right?
Yeah.
Super stuff. Do you like him, Alex?
Oh, hugely.
You like him hugely? Do elaborate.
Well, what he said.
The same. Okay, let me ask you a different question.
Okay.
Then, because you don't want to answer that one. Let me ask you this one. Spinazzola.
Yeah.
Crucial to the way that Italy play. I'm going to say it. Crucial. Injured. He went off injured. Poor guy. He looked like he was crying on the stretcher on the way off. It indicates to us perhaps that the tournament is over, or at least that he thinks that his tournament is over. And he's been such a bright spark in that team. I mean, that's kind of lucky for Spain in a way, isn't it? Whoever Italy are going to face next, is he possible to replace?
He's not possible to replace.
Okay.
In terms of how they play, his ability to act effectively as a left winger when they're in possession and attacking, but also come back and make absolutely crucial defensive blocks. I mean, the block he made off Lukaku was phenomenal.
Yeah.
That is just very, very unusual. Under Fonseca at Roma, he was playing as a wing back. And I think that's where he developed a lot of this kind of up and down, you know, being able to work both ends of the pitch. He developed his attacking game enormously under Fonseca. You know, as JJ said, the whole kind of shift of Italy's asymmetry is perfectly created to allow everybody to fulfill those functions. So maintaining the width on the right, that leaves the channel for Barella. But that only works because Spinazzola maintains the width on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
So it may be that what Italy do is they tilt it and they get Di Lorenzo to play much more aggressively on the right-hand side and have someone maybe like Bastoni or Toloi. So Toloi's played as a left-sided centre-back for Atalanta, so he can push up and overlap, which is what Atalanta centre-backs do. Bastoni can play on the left side of a central defence and so has that left foot ability. That might mean that if they tilt it, it kind of works, but it requires a rearrangement for them.
Because otherwise it's Emerson, right?
Otherwise, it's Emerson. And
which is not necessarily a bad thing. It's obviously.
Well, he's just not nearly as good.
Sure.
So, you know, do you go with an inferior player and try and make the system exactly work? Or do you tweak the system in a way that does kind of make sense? Because if it's Toloi, for example, he still gets forwards.
Mm.
He just doesn't get forwards as much. But all you need to do is change the way the wingers play. And it still kind of works fairly well. Verratti still pushes up a lot. Barella could hold slightly back. I don't know. But it definitely makes Spain's task slightly easier.
Would you be very worried about that if you were Roberto Mancini, JJ?
I think he'll just have a straight replace. I think Emerson will go straight in and replace him in exactly the same way that Spinazzola plays. But like Alex says, he's not the same player. Because Spinazzola is essentially just an every position footballer.
Yeah.
Who happens to get shunted into that left position.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that he's right-footed. I don't think that's really relevant. It just happens to be that he is, but he can still play in that position. What you might get is a little bit of variation in how they get the ball in earlier from the left wing, but I don't know they're all about that, trying to get the ball in early at all. It's about getting to those positions, getting the shape, and then going from there. And then Spinazzola rotates with other players around him that in part of the pattern when they get to that last bit of the pitch.
It's interesting because there are quite a few wrong-sided left-backs at this tournament, and Mela has been particularly good. But a lot of the time what they do is they drive infield and they create underlapping runs, or they're looking to play passes off their stronger foot infield towards players that are dropping off. Spinazzola doesn't do that. He maintains the width and he can play with both feet. So he's quite unorthodox as a wrong-sided fullback.
It's just really good.
Yeah.
Really. Where does he play?
Spinazzola.
Yeah.
Roma.
Roma. Yeah. There we go. Lovely. I mean, not lovely. Sorry for him. He's been great.
Yeah, it really sucks he's out.
It's been a lot of injuries, hasn't there, JJ?
Yeah, it seems to be a lot of muscle injuries, but I mean, not a doctor, but I assume that's something that would be a natural consequence of a season where you're playing a game every 3 days and having to sleep in a COVID bubble all of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know, I'm really curious to see next year the World Cup, because it's going to be played in November and December, right, in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, they will have had less of a summer in order to deal with that kind of break in the middle, but curious to see them play at an international tournament kind of midway through their season stamina levels.
Well, I mean, I don't know if they've got this that kind of idea where they're going to air condition the outside to make it playable for the players. That's just a genuine thing I saw. They're trying to like air condition the outside so they can play. Because you can't play when it's as hot as being in an oven.
But they're air conditioning the stadiums, aren't they?
No, but I mean like, literally the air. Like,
do you mean in the stadiums?
I think so. I think also outside.
Yeah.
I know this sounds...
air condition outside?
Like I've had a knock to the head, but like...
Someone was telling me that I got in a cab with someone and he was saying, the driver was saying he spent a lot of time in Qatar. He said that there'll be like, you know, air conditioned bus stops and then you don't like, you just people just won't go outside if they don't, you know, they won't need to is what he said.
Yeah, it's too hot to do anything.
Yeah.
Which is why it's held at that time of the year anyway, but it's still very,
and the stadiums
very hot.
Have all got roofs, haven't they? So they're going to roofs. So you can, anyway, I don't know why we're talking about this. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Belgium. Disappointing, JJ. They are ranked number one in the world. I will remind you that they are ranked number one in the world. But do, when you look at that defence, as you've kind of mentioned already a little bit, you don't really think that, do you?
No, I think, that's the thing, I genuinely didn't think they, I know they're one of the favourites and they've got like these great players, like I said.
Ranked number one in the world.
Yeah, I mean, there's just, I think they're just missing, I think the way Roberto Martinez makes them play, they don't really, there's no variation from that 3-4-3 really ever. There might be an occasional tweaks. The changes they made late on, I couldn't really work out what the system is meant to be. It seemed to be more like, as Alex said, vibes. I kind of get that. Like, just throwing on Dries Mertens, put him somewhere.
That was exciting. Similarly confused to you. I know that somebody in the chat said at the beginning as well, it was anti-football for the last 20 minutes. I assume they mean from Italy. You're saying your friends thought that, like, I thought it was cool, man. I thought like suddenly everyone was just going for
that's it.
And
Belgium was just trying to go from end to end. Get rid of the midfield. Don't need a midfield if you're losing. Just get the ball up front and get all your boys up the pitch.
Yeah.
And then Italy lock it down because they do. And then the most weaselly thing you can do and pretend to be injured every time you get touched.
Yeah.
But they win the game. It's the kind of thing that you said about Scotland and England players, that they should be accepting the ways of the weasel earlier.
I like weasels.
The weasel's a very noble animal.
I think they are the most weaselly of the animals.
They get very unfair rap, a weasel, I would say.
Also ferrets.
Sure.
But what do ferrets do that a weasel doesn't? What's a weasel? Why is a weasel
racing? Climb up the old trouser leg. That's what the ferret does, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the ferret thing
racing.
About the ferret.
I don't think you can race weasels because
weasels are far
too,
more feral than ferrets.
This
aren't they?
Is the thing. Yeah.
I mean, aren't ferrets are domesticated, right?
Yeah.
Do you get wild ferrets?
Yeah, for sure.
You do?
They just keep out of sight.
I mean, they were all originally wild. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, everything was originally wild.
They're only domesticated. Although you don't get wild cows, do you?
No.
Or buffalo?
I mean, also dogs. Dogs.
The
oryx didn't exist
was a
in
wild
the way.
Cow.
Dogs are just domesticated wolves, right? Over a long period of time.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't know whether the ferret is wild, whether you get wild ferrets or whether they are entirely domesticated. I'm sure there probably are wild ferrets. Someone in the chat will tell us. We'll pick that up in a couple of minutes' time. But until then, Alex, tell me about Belgium now, because presumably, I think it's too harsh to say this will be a rebuilding job, but they are kind of at the end of that golden generation time, aren't they? I mean, like some of their more important players are growing older. We're all growing older.
They're a domesticated species of polecat.
There you go. They're a cat.
Polecat. It's disappointing for them because obviously there is going to be a transition and you would kind of think that this tournament would be the opportunity to particularly transition in some centre-backs. You know, there are a couple of decent young Belgian centre-backs.
Who's left?
People like... Oh, do you mean the defenders coming through? Or
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just mean anyone other than the ones that played.
So someone like Edward Plettinks is good. There's a guy at Bruges whose name I've forgotten. I should have prepared that.
But, lovely city.
But it's sort of a bit odd that you have younger centre-backs who are left on the bench, and obviously Boyata and Denier did something to fall out of favour.
I didn't really notice anything.
Not really. And Denier, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, played pretty well in the international games up until the beginning of the tournament and had that ability to kind of push forwards and carry the ball up. And he was a much more proactive centre back in that back three. So he would be the middle one, and he would be the one who would push up and contest the ball, or push up and close down the striker if the striker was dropping off.
Yeah.
And again, that was something that Belgium really weren't doing in this game. And JJ alluded to it earlier with the goal where they were backing off Insigne. If you're slow, that's because if you're worried that if you step up, you're going to get done for pace in the kind of close quarters.
Yeah.
So you back off and try and narrow the angle and protect your goalkeeper in the assumption that the shot's going to end up being blocked or go wide. So yeah, Belgium have this kind of period of rebuilding, but they do still have, obviously, in Lukaku and De Bruyne, Tielemans, you know, there is a spine of players there that are really good. Doku came on, carried the ball a huge amount. Sorry, didn't come on, started. Carried the ball a lot. Does still need a little bit more end product, I think, but this was partly a function.
He zipped past people. That was quite fun.
He did. Scouted Football, which is a great Twitter account, were saying that he has this little sort of drop shoulder and spring like a rugby union winger, which is very true. But because of the way that Belgium weren't getting players forwards to support him, that a lot of those runs were ending up with him kind of going down a cul-de-sac because Di Lorenzo could just shepherd him away, and it wasn't, you know, there was not a lot to help him out there.
Yeah.
Was it Macheli that you were thinking of at Club Brugge? Some people in the chat have suggested that might be the case. Or Macheli? I'm not sure how you say
it. No, he's a midfielder, I think.
Oh.
I can't remember. I'll
who knows?
Try and work it out. But yeah, it's, I don't know. They presumably will now look away from Roberto Martinez.
Mm.
But I think, again, it's going to be difficult. The Belgian club game, I don't think, has any particularly strong coaches coming through or people that are naturally going to take that job on.
Yeah.
So it's hard to see where it goes from here.
It does also seem to be that international management, the way to do it is to be like what Gareth Southgate's doing with England and making sure you don't concede goals at all ever. You can argue that the way that Belgium control games is their way of doing that. Rather than being defensive, they control it by having the ball so the opposition can't score.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if they just were really solid and tried to just only play on the counter, like Italy had more of the ball than them today and they normally have more of the ball, Belgium. So that's the thing, they're used to having possession, but they're not used to really being on, not the back foot, but having to play in that way. And it might be that they just need to have a little variation in how they play and maybe set up to pretend they're worse than they actually are.
Get Poulos in.
Yes.
What do you think?
Sam Allardyce.
Yeah, well.
No.
I prefer Poulos, I'll be honest.
Well, anyone like that. Not actually them, but there was someone you could get in that would do a job. And I don't know, I don't think there's anything wrong with Martinez. Like, he's one of the most highly regarded coaches like in world football ever. Anyone you see talk about him says that, like, obviously the ideas he has and the sessions he puts on and the way he seems to manage players and people is really impressive. But, I mean, that's Belgium kind of done now.
That's Belgium.
Yeah.
This just in, Michael Cox and Tom Warville are speaking on Twitter. That's exciting, isn't it? Twitter's got that new thing where you can listen to them talk. Mm. So if you want to abandon us and go and listen to Michael Cox and Tom Warville, now's the time. But we'll be back after this break to do more of the same thing.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Right. Okay. Let's carry things on now with Switzerland 1-1 Spain. And of course, Spain went through on penalties. It was a bizarre penalty shootout, JJ, wasn't it? Let's do penalties first because they were very, very odd. Switzerland were so good in their penalties against France, but they were pretty awful here. Yeah. So what I wanted to ask you about was, I wanted to ask you to tell me, to talk through the difference, and we mentioned this before, the difference between goalkeeper-dependent penalties and goalkeeper-independent penalties, because there seemed to be some confusion from the Switzerland players.
I mean, there's, you take a penalty however you want to, but the important thing is that you smash it in the back of the net, or at least beat the goalkeeper, right?
And that would be an independent
penalty. Well, right? when Alan Shearer used to step up and take a penalty, he said he would always, well, what did he say? I've watched the other day, I can't remember exactly what he said, so let's not paraphrase Alan Shearer and talk ill of him. I love Alan Shearer.
Okay.
Now, if you're taking a penalty, you want to just think where you're going to put it. You often hear this. You want to know where you're going to put it. You don't make any changes to your mind when you're up to the ball. Yeah. And then you...
Don't change that mind.
Don't change the mind and put the ball into the goal.
Yeah. Stuff it in.
Yes.
Yeah.
So either... So what's a lot of penalty takers do now, Jorginho's one, I think Pogba does it, Bruno Fernandes does it, is they run up, they take one of these little hop, skip, jump things and they use that time before they strike the ball to look at the goalkeeper. And in that little slowing down period, they see which way the keeper's going and then they place it the other way.
Yeah.
And I think it
seems... That's a goalkeeper-dependent penalty.
That is dependent on the goalkeeper. So you are dependent on what you're... Yeah, so you are making your mind up based on what the goalkeeper is doing so you can beat them. So like the psychology of the penalty is what's helping you win it, basically, rather than technique, although it is technique that you're doing.
Well, that requires extra ice coolness, doesn't it?
It requires supreme confidence.
Yeah.
Probably just actual arrogance.
Yeah.
Real high technical quality and belief.
Also, because you're not allowed to fake it anymore, are you? Do you remember there was like there was that sort of controversial incident maybe 10, 15 years ago where a player did a fake run-up and then pretended to shoot and didn't shoot and the goalkeeper went and then and they changed the rule so you can't do that, I think.
I can't remember the exact rules, but yeah, you just can't. I think the rule is like just don't take the mick. That's the kind of thing you do. And so they'll do this and Fernandes is very good at it, Jorginho's very good at it and they roll it in the goal because as soon as the goalkeeper pushes his weight to one side of his body, there's no way he's getting out of that. The balance has shifted, can't go anywhere else. Glad you're yawning while I'm telling you about this. And that's it rolls in the goal, that's what you do. But just put your foot through it.
Yeah.
Like if you're nervous and you're stepping up, like I think it's a Kanji's penalty. It was awful.
Awful.
I just like
there were two from Switzerland. It looked like they were trying to wait for the keeper to go. But I think you described when we were watching them, it looked like they were lining up for the goalkeeper-dependent penalties where they wait to see where the keeper's going to go before they place it, but then placing it where the keeper went.
Exactly.
That doesn't make any sense.
I think maybe it's just a really good bit of goalkeeping by Unai Simon in the Spanish goal where he moves his body from like side to side, boop, 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 like that kind of...
Yeah.
Oh, you can't see that in an audio platform, but he's doing that.
You can hear the bub, bub,
zip, zip, zip. And then the last like zoop, is what's making him go that way, but he's already going that way. It's just bad. It's bad. And I think if you're nervous, and they look nervous, I think, stepping up as well. Mm. It seemed less nervy in the last penalty shoot that they took. Just put your foot through it.
Yeah.
Like, especially if you're nervous, because at least, even if you go down the middle, if you hit it so hard that the keeper can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
The worst case is, I mean, you put it over, which they also did. Yeah.
They just kept missing. It was awful to watch because Spain missed missed the first penalty. I think it was a post and out, wasn't it?
Busquets hit the post.
Busquets hit the post. And then whoever went first for Switzerland scored. And after that point, they just kept missing. You kept thinking, goodness me, they've really spurned it. But hey, man, they took them all the way. Next thing I want to talk about, though, the red card, Alex. Because it was Rumor Freuler, 76 minutes in, very divisive, as it turns out. Heated argument with Seb Stafford-Blaw from the Lions' Den.
Yeah. Yes, it was divisive. It's. I suppose it's becoming increasingly common to look at one's Twitter feed and see people going, that's the worst red card in history.
Yeah.
And you don't know what they mean by that.
I couldn't understand it at all.
I mean, I think...
As in, it was a red card?
That is my opinion, yes.
Yeah. I don't understand.
But a lot of people are going to disagree with us.
Lots of people already did.
Sure. I guess to me that, you know, there are 2 feet going forwards. The ball is kind of not really taken. The main issue, I suppose, is the intent that he's going pretty hell for leather towards the player's legs. And it's reckless, isn't it? And I guess this is why it wasn't overruled by VAR, because there isn't a clear and obvious error there that the referee's made under the laws of the game. a tackle or challenge that endangers the safety of an opponent or uses excessive force or brutality, ooh, must be sanctioned as serious foul play. Any player who lunges at an opponent and challenging for the ball from the front, from the side, or from behind using one or both legs with excessive force or endangers the safety of an opponent is guilty of serious foul play. And you can very easily argue that that was excessive force, that it was a lunge, that there were 2 feet. Having said that, there will be some people who say, okay, well, that could have been a yellow. And I think probably if it had been a yellow, that wouldn't have been VAR'd up to a red either.
Yeah, maybe.
So it's just weird. I mean, the main point is
it's a two-footed tackle. I don't get it.
You're asking an individual on the pitch as a referee to make a decision. You're then, which obviously has interpretation and nuance and all of the rest of it in it, you're then referring that to VAR, which is another individual with discretion and nuance and all of that to review that decision. And so, but under the laws of the game, it makes sense that it's a red.
Yeah, I don't get it at all. I mean, like, there are a handful of people in the chat who disagree. Of course, everybody is entitled to their opinion, however foolish the opinion is. But I don't understand. I mean, the player went in with 2 feet. It's a two-footed tackle. They're pretty much always red cards. Studs up on the underneath foot. It's his fault that he lets his following foot go through before he hits the player. He goes over the top of the ball. I genuinely can't. I'm astounded by the reaction. And I'm astounded by Seb Stafford-Blaw's reaction, JJ, because he was virulent in the TIFO WhatsApp group chat that it was a red card. I'm quite sad that he is currently being eaten by lions and not here so that he can't defend himself. But I did get him to record a little message for us explaining why he thought it was a red card. And I'm going to play that. And I'm hoping that the microphone's going to pick that up. Here we go. Here we go now. Oh, and as I've said that, my phone's turned sideways. Here we go.
Right, not a red card for me because he's not
It was a red card. And that's the kind of analysis that we would have got if Seb was here. Why? Because I would have shut him down if he was in the room, just like I shut him down on the WhatsApp chat. It was a red card, Seb. Wasn't it, JJ?
Yeah, and for context, that message is about 1:30 long, isn't it? And you cut him off after 4 seconds.
Yeah, I cut him off after 4 seconds. Yeah. I did ask him specifically to go somewhere quiet and record that and try to be as clear as possible so that people would be able to hear it. All the while knowing, Seb, that I wasn't even going to let it play because it was a red card. And what I say is correct. Anyway, this isn't match of the day, JJ. Tell me about Spain's performance.
I think Spain are really good when they pass the ball quickly and have a bit of aggression to their play.
Sure. Yeah.
So like not as in the lunging tackle, which was definitely a red card by the other team, which is Switzerland. Yes, I knew that.
Speaking of the red card though, this was interesting because it felt like beforehand, Spain were very controlled. Spain were on top of the game. They had it by the neck, right? After the red card, it felt slightly different. They seemed slow. They didn't react in the way that you would want them to against 10 men.
I think I should really know this before I even look at it. Was the red card after the goal that Switzerland scored? It was, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it was 76 minutes in. Yeah.
So I think Spain had started to do this thing they do where they don't... So like I say, when they're really good when they pass the ball aggressively and at high tempo and there's that real like tip-tap to the way they're playing. As soon as they lower that, they become, because they're so wide and open to be able to have all these little passes they can do. Like you saw the way that their wingers were hugging the touchline the entire game. So yeah. They're just trying to be as wide as they can and make sure they're getting the ball from back to front, through lines, like in control the game. Again, like Italy, controlling the game by having the ball. But as soon as they stop passing it with a tempo, it's easier to close them down and take them to one side of the pitch and close them. If you don't have any variation, it's not just all about being fast all the time, it's variation in tempo. Like being fast for a certain bit, then slowing it down to control it and calm it down. Then when you know, pick it up like a, I don't know, like a volume control, go up and down. Don't know why you'd be doing that on volume control. How about one volume, stay there? But they could do that on the football pitch, and that's what makes them good. But like, yeah, and you see that when they start to let it go, and that's when the Switzerland win the ball, hit the pitch. Why have I forgotten that again? And that's how they get in. It's just a mistake. There's also the defensive error. You could say that. Oh my God, the defenders are in a mix-up. That's what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Without seeing their names. Laporte and Torres.
I'm so sorry, I wasn't really listening to you.
I just think I stopped listening to myself.
But there's a reason for that, that mix-up. And we had a look at it on the footage. And Spain are in possession prior to that goal. And the ball comes in field, short pass, to a Spanish player who's going to control it. And Torres drops away into his left to show as a passing reception option for that player. And that player gets robbed of the ball. And so Torres is out of position, having wandered away from his player for no real discernible reason, because he wasn't the only passing option. But Spain was so focused on retaining possession and on how they play out that Torres basically abdicated his defensive responsibility of staying with that man while the ball was okay in Spanish possession, but still relatively close to the Spanish goal. And that suddenly meant that when that quick interchange of passes happened, Torres was then scrambling, and then Laporte has to come over and help him out. And that's where the issue comes from. But I think that's indicative of how Spain got themselves kind of into this mentality of, okay, we're in charge now. We make over 700 passes and we keep the ball and it'll all be fine. And that's their first thought. It's not...
So the right way of playing rather than trying to get the win, almost like being obsessed with winning, just passing it around, stroking it about. Yeah, there's something that I don't like about them. And they were really good against Slovakia. Sure enough, they fell apart. They just crumbled. But there was a certain tempo, I think. Just really, really, they seemed desperate to win. Like they knew they had to win and they were not going to let them go, and they were biting into them. Ferociously cornered, like the Lions with Seb. But Seb's fighting them off.
He's gorging on his flesh.
He sent us pictures. He's doing very well. They're playing Italy in the next game. And Italy are going to be really fast at them, aggressive, push them high. The one thing you could see about Spain in this game as well, not the one thing, as many things, but one thing you could see about them is Gerard Moreno, who came on as a sub at halftime for Sarabia. Mm. He must have been injured, was he, maybe? I'm not sure he went off.
I don't know.
Someone stood in his foot earlier. Maybe that was it. But he missed two like massive chances. He missed one in the near post from about 2 yards, and he missed another from a corner from 6 yards, headed it with his shoulder. Like, this kind of thing you shouldn't do if you're that level of a striker. And it's probably the same sort of problem I've got with Morata, where they have all the ball and they create loads of chances, but they don't finish them.
Yeah.
And it sounds very basic, but that is
their big problem. Well, as evidenced by today, I mean, they played 120 minutes of football and penalties to get past Switzerland. No mean feat, of course. France couldn't manage that earlier, but, you know, you would hope that, as you say, you have those two big opportunities there, finish it off in the game, don't play the extra half an hour.
Spain completed 881 passes this game.
That's a lot of passes.
28 shots.
Yeah.
Which, that level of dominance, you just shouldn't not win.
You really should be scoring more than one goal.
You really should. I mean, if you're taking 28 shots and you're converting one, that's quite bad.
Well, this brings me to my next point. Two things here, Alex. The first is that Spain actually have the highest goal creation actions per 90. I'm looking at you confused when I say that. Yes, that is the thing.
Yeah.
Of any team in the tournament, the highest goal creation. That you can tell us what that means in a minute.
Okay.
But also, here's another thing. As you were saying before about, you know, Spain being kind of obsessed with the right way of playing. Mm. Seb's left these lovely stats in here for us from the Lions Den. They also have the highest long pass completion rate at the Euros, which is fine. Good passers. But they've also completed the highest number of crosses during the tournament, which is surprising based on how you think that they play. Because it sounds like... You know, it sounds like we're going back to the old Tony Pulis conversation. That's wrong for sure. Explain to me why.
No, it's not wrong. So they've not only do they have the highest pass completion rate for long passes, but they've also completed the most.
Mm.
So they're the most accurate, but they're the biggest by volume too. That's quite unusual.
Yeah.
A lot of that is down to Aymeric Laporte. He has two main passes. And as JJ said earlier, the way Spain like to play is that the wingers stay very, very high and wide, kind of like old school Pep Guardiola stuff.
Yeah.
Before cutting inside. And Laporte will either look to kind of turn back inside with his left foot and hit raking balls across to whoever the right winger is, because although Ferran Torres started on the right, him and Sarabia swap like every 20 minutes or so, they'll swap sides.
Yeah.
Or he does this long pass, which is sort of back inside and then up the center of the pitch through the left half space as a sort of dink over the top for a player to run into. Sometimes it's Pedri, other times it'll be like Morata coming across. So this is very much a way that they progress the ball upfield, and then they all rush up to join that. It's kind of like their get out card.
Tell me about the get out card after this break.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We're back from the break, and all I want to hear about, all I've been thinking about during the break, Alex, was the get-out card.
Yeah. So you can't always pass your way out of the back nicely. And if you have a centre-back who is very good at these long passes, think Liverpool and Virgil van Dijk.
Sure.
It's a way of accessing your wingers, because if your wingers stay very, very high and wide, which Spain's do, then you can isolate the opposition fullback, or if the opposition fullback is pushed up as part of a press or part of a block, sometimes you'll find that those wingers are actually behind or closer to the opposition goal than the fullbacks are. So having a pinpoint accuracy centre-back who can play that particular pass with their left foot to open out that angle is a really effective way of progressing the ball up the pitch. And what Italy then like to do is come back inside from that position. So they make all of that ground up.
Italy?
Sorry, Spain.
There we go.
Thank you. They make all of
that
ground up.
You're welcome. I've corrected you. You're welcome.
That's great. Mm-hmm. That's so good that you're here to catch me when I fall.
No problem.
Then the rest of the team rushes up. Pedri will sit in the left half space and recycle that possession. And this is the problem. If that were Italy, they would just, and I meant Italy there, thank you, they would just take a shot straight away.
Sure.
When it's Spain, it's part of a plan that tends to necessitate the rest of the team catching up and then creating something a little bit more intricate.
Sure.
So
a lovely circle.
Yeah. So it's a way of getting the ball up the pitch, but I don't think that they capitalize on it in quite the way that they could do.
That's one of the good things about Spain's centre-backs, JJ. The passing volume and accuracy. But. I want to hear about issues for Spain now. Because sure, good team, yeah? But they've got problems at the back.
I mean, I think we talked about this in one of the other podcasts that we've done, where it talked about how Laporte is basically brand new to this squad.
Yeah.
Because he was French until about 4 weeks ago. And then also, I mean, they're playing Eric Garcia, who is clearly very good with the ball, but I don't see him as being anywhere near like hard enough. Maybe he is, but I don't see it.
Sure.
And then Pau Torres seems a bit, not lightweight as well, but there's something you can definitely body him and get him out. Like, I don't think a big striker's, Immobile wouldn't be fear of playing against.
I think he is lightweight.
Yeah.
I think he's often linked with Premier League clubs because he's a very capable passer and he's good at bringing the ball forwards. But if you actually watch him play week in, week out, you just think he would get bodied in the Premier League.
And that's not like...
That's what they said about John Stones, though, and then he got good.
He's good, but also he plays alongside a much more physical centre-back. And so... Generally speaking, the other centre back will take the one because most Premier
General
League
point,
scenes,
though, can't you just send them to the gym? You know, can't you just give them a sort of lifting exercises and then they get stronger?
That's true, but sometimes if you add too much muscle mass, then you're taking away from other aspects of their game. Maybe they just have a lighter frame. I mean, like Ruben Dias is built like a brick outhouse because he's got those broad shoulders and everything. Like you,
it's not just the muscles; it's all of his bones.
Right, exactly. So, I would say Torres is lightweight.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. We need defenders with more bones.
Yeah.
That would really help. He reminds me a bit of like Victor Lindelof. That kind of, Man United, very good with the ball, but just quite there.
But that's why Lindelof tends to step back and sweep.
Yeah.
And Maguire takes the man, because most Premier League sides will play with one striker up front. So you can do a man for man on that one with the more strong physical.
Big lad. Maguire is a big old lad, isn't he?
Well, the other thing, I mean, it might just not be that. I think if you put balls into the box against that Spanish centre-back pairing, I think you can not bully them, but you can definitely win a fair share of battles against them. But that's not solely because it's just how the two of them play, whichever pairing is there. It's often because the way they play and when they slow down and you can tackle them high up the pitch and they're very exposed, so they're vulnerable. So it's not, if you're playing against, if you're playing behind that two, behind a very defensive three and one of the fullbacks tucks in or something, you're going to look a lot more solid than you do when you're trying to play more expansive football, but just not quite at the same rate.
Yeah.
Another thing with like Spain as well, like Luis Enrique, they've got this association Spain with playing that kind of tiki-taka way. They don't play that way anymore. They still like to keep the ball and they like to move it around constantly. The ball has to move constantly, so players have to move constantly, and that's how they play. They stop at halftime. That's when they stop moving.
Yeah.
But Enrique at Barcelona is his best team there. Was quite direct. Like they kept the ball when they needed to, but they went from back to front very quickly.
Yeah.
Which helped, I think, may also explain some of the long passing. And also they'll move the ball to one side of the pitch and then switch it with another reason with it. So it's all about getting from back to front as quickly as they can. But then a lot of teams now sit off them a little bit and try and stop them playing through lines, so they don't really have an option. I don't know. Like their centre backs probably, yeah, that would be their weaker point, even though they have good individual centre-backs.
Because often
defending is not just a case of one person, it is the team.
You know why he likes the long balls? Why? Because he's Luis Enrique up the top. Yeah?
I want to yes and you there, but...
It's not hopeful.
No.
Alex.
Hi.
Speaking of hope, Jan Sommer had a good game, didn't he? I felt a bit bad for him. He had a good game.
He did. He made 10 saves in that game, which is a record for this tournament. And he's made 15 in the knockout stages, which is the most by any goalkeeper in the competition's recorded history, according to Opta.
Wow. Yeah.
It just seemed like Spain versus Zoma, really, didn't it? And some of those saves, he's often quite a proactive goalkeeper. He likes to come out and narrow the angle. But what impressed me was because Switzerland were dropping so deep and he quite often had a defender really close in front of him. Akanji, I thought, did well making a lot of blocks and stuff. But that meant that quite a few of those saves, I'm thinking of the Moreno volley, were coming from really close because Switzerland were holding such a deep line that they kind of had to be. And so it was all just pure reaction stuff. And he did brilliantly. He's very unlucky to be on the receiving end of a defeat there.
I mean, on Switzerland as well, you feel a bit bad for them, don't you, JJ? Because Granit Xhaka was suspended, of course, who's maybe their best player, right? And also, added to that, Braylon Bolo went off with a hamstring injury about 25 minutes in. That's a shame. That's two players who are the best players at helping them make things happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even that they are the best players. It's that like Xhaka controls the game.
Yeah.
So he's the guy in control of everything for them. He dictates the tempo of how they play. He can spray the ball whenever he needs to get on the pitch when he needs to. And on that note, that's exactly what Mbolo brings as well. That he drives the ball, he carries it. You saw it in the first game against Wales, the difference he made at halftime, and just told him to drive in that space. And doing that took them up the pitch and relieved the pressure. So when you're playing against Spain, who are pushing you back and they push up, I mean, the goal came from them pushing slightly higher up the pitch and getting their luck with that. So not having the guy controlling tempo of the game and controlling the passing and then losing the player that can carry them up the pitch made an already difficult task far too hard.
Yeah. Shame. Yeah, well, there we go. Switzerland will always be remembered for knocking France out. That was fun and exciting, wasn't it?
It was fun.
I was wondering if somebody put a tweet out. I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was. I can't remember the author, but wondering if this was the first time that a team could have won two penalty shootouts in a row in knockout stages of a tournament. I can't remember a team that have done that before. Switzerland, of course, haven't done it, so it doesn't matter. But they came close. They came close. Anyway, points are bad. They're not that bad today, but they're quite bad for JJ. The bad
has he
for you.
Gained? No.
Alex had a perfect score for the. I think Seb has changed my points to Roman numeral points, and I can't read that. So
it's 124.
Okay, thanks to the private school boys for being able to read my Roman numeral. Thank you. I assume it was you, Seb. Very funny. I don't like it. It's not fair to mock people for being poor or poorly educated. And, you know, not a good spend of your time when you should be dodging lions down there in the London Zoo. Anyway, bad day for JJ because Alex has opened the gap up further to 9 points from 6. So he had a perfect score on the Italy-Belgium game. He said 2-1. It was 2-1. These things happen. I also had a pretty decent one. I said 3-1 Italy. Only 1 point gained there. Only one bad point. But yes, I'm on Roman numerals now. Alex is leading the pack on 94. JJ following up on 103.
Oh my God, Seb's going to catch me.
And Seb's on 108. He also had a decent enough day. Seb's also been kind enough to send in his PAB predictions. We're calling it PAB now. Points of bad PAB. His PAB predictions for tomorrow. Seb says Denmark 2, 1 Czech Republic, and England 1, 0 Ukraine. So JJ, I'll come to you first for your PABs for tomorrow, please. PAB me. Denmark versus... No, wait.
Can I ask you first?
You're absolutely right. I remembered that as you were making that face at me. Yeah. Alex, you should be going first here. PAB, please, for Denmark, Czech Republic.
3-1, Denmark.
3-1, Denmark. Hot diggity dog. Okay. And England, Ukraine, please.
2-0, England.
Well, there we go.
Denmark have got the ball in the opposition box more than any other team so far and have the third highest XG4.
So, sounds like you should be predicting Czech Republic, JJ.
Alex is using statistics to win this.
Yes, he does
and
care.
And I should have done this.
Do you know where I got those statistics from? You know, Joe, don't you?
Your parents' house. You know.
What?
No, I don't know. What? It's the end.
From The Athletic.
From The Athletic, did you? Is it? Would you think it's fair to say that The Athletic is helping you win this game?
In part.
At such a low cost. Anyway, tell me, JJ, what you think about Denmark, Czech Republic, please.
I think it's going to be definitely
agony on your face, riddled with
I
agony.
I really, really want to not finish.
Go.
Denmark, would you say 2?
He said 3-1.
I said 3-1. Seb said 2-1.
Denmark, 2. Czech Republic, 3.
There we go. Yeah, see, this is not far from what I was going to say, too. But beforehand, England, Ukraine, please.
2-0 England.
2-0 England, same as him. That's not a good tactic.
Oh,
mate,
so you said,
you've got to catch up. You've got to catch
up.
Well,
I can't
with him.
Do that. Okay, 4-1 England.
Yeah, again, great. You're
I'm
gonna
just
be sticking
going nuts
with
now.
Me I, here. Yeah, well, it's good for you to know that your approach is very similar to mine because I'm doing excellently well at the game. My score's so big, it's in Roman numerals. Okay, for me, I'm going to say that Czech Republic will beat Denmark 2-1. I think that's going to happen. And also I'm going to say that England will beat Ukraine 7-0.
Oh, you're See, drunk, man.
Now I push it up. Joe has to go the extra mile to make it funny.
Yes, I know. I know. Thanks. I was hoping not to gain 6 points tomorrow, but I will be now. Right, there we go. Yes, as Aaron in the chat says, Alex is in JJ's head now. I would say living rent-free. Rent-free. Pab, pab, pab. This is where the game is fun. At the beginning, it was just a silly game. We didn't understand the rules. And then there was the song. Then there was the second series. And now there's a psychological breakdown. It's very exciting. Pab. Anyway, Alex Stewart, thanks today.
Thank you, Joe.
And JJ Bull, the Bull Man, thanking to you.
Thanks.
Oh, your whole body clicked. That's a weird sound.
Yeah. Click it into action.
We'll be back tomorrow to talk about those big, big games. Very exciting. And who knows if Seb will be here or not? We just couldn't say. Maybe he'll be in another difficult situation. But for now, we'll say thanks as usual to our crack production team of Craig and Sol. And there's Sol's hand there. It's a lovely hand. Right, that's the end of the show. We'll be back tomorrow. Bienvenue. Ciao. Toos. Other things.